Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast, talking about youth baseball coaching and player development. Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field.
We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show.
Hello and welcome back to the Performance Baseball Podcast. How's it going, Adam?
Going well. It's a beautiful day. It's Friday.
Looking forward
to a little OU versus Auburn tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
OU plays tomorrow. OSU plays tonight.
Jackson Arnold's coming back to town.
Nice.
Should be. I'll be very interested to see how he does, how he handles the environment.
Oh, yeah.
Coming back to OU for the first time.
Man. What's the favor? Is OU favorite to win that game?
I think OU's favorite, mostly because we're the home team. I haven't actually checked the lines, but I'm pretty sure we're favored.
Nice.
But we're going to go down there tomorrow and do a little tailgating.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
We don't have tickets to the game or anything, but we're going to tailgate and hang out and throw football around.
So to put you on the spot, what's your go-to tailgate setup?
Are you
like the ones that bring tents and TVs and all that stuff?
That's the plan.
The
plan is to bring our canopy, all of our chairs, to bring a TV, and get set up
nice.
That way. I've got to track down a generator. I think I need a generator. so I'll have to figure that out. But yeah, OU just started this thing this semester, I guess, where one part of the lawn, north lawn or something, they've opened up to the public, and you can just show up, and it's first come, first serve, and it's free to kind of set up and tailgate. So that's what we're gonna go try and do.
That's awesome.
And
you said it's the front lawn, so pretty much right next to.
Yeah, I don't know where it is exactly, but my wife does.
But so, right next to the stadium, that's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it's pretty close. Yeah, I know it's close.
That's awesome. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Especially for, like, your kids, too, because I'm assuming the whole family's going.
Yeah, we went down 2 weeks ago when Michigan was in town.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We didn't tailgate, but we just kind of went down and checked out the scene, walked around.
You're brave, man. You're brave.
You know, I thought it was going to be crazy. I thought it was going to be really hard to like find parking and get in and get out. It was a little difficult to find parking. The traffic though really was not that bad.
Wow.
I thought it would be impossible.
That's
I thought
awesome.
It was going to be a nightmare. And I was in between tournament games. So like my older boys had played in the morning and my younger boys were about to play in the afternoon. I was there is no way. I don't have time. And then at the last minute I was like, I'm just going to give it a shot.
Oh, my gosh.
It worked out. I was able to hang out for about an hour, and it was fun.
That's so awesome.
We're going to try and do a little bit more of a setup this time and see how that goes. We've never really done tailgating, per se.
Especially without going to a game, too.
Right.
I'm sure that'll be fun. I'm sure it'll be a blast.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
We're going to have fun with it.
Nice.
What are your weekend plans?
This weekend, we're planning on braving it out at the Oklahoma State Fair. So we're going to go tomorrow.
All right.
So we got some stuff going out of the gym in the morning, but we'll take our two kids down to the fair. I mean, it's the last weekend for the fair, so I don't know how busy it's going to be, but it's always a good time.
Yeah.
We're going just after lunchtime. So, I mean, hopefully we'll be, pretty hungry because, I mean, fair food's awesome.
Oh, yeah. What's your go-to favorite food?
Man, as simple as it sounds, just the corn dogs, man. The corn dogs.
Yes.
The corn dogs, and then
now I've not been to the Oklahoma State Fair, but I've been to the Texas State Fair.
Sure.
And they have those big, huge, long corn dogs.
Like the foot long, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that what the way these are here too?
Yep. They have all, man, there's so much.
Is it
food.
Fletcher's? Is it Fletcher's up here? I know Fletcher's is a big deal down in Dallas.
I don't know. I didn't go last year. So the name, I don't know. But that's
anyway,
like the go-to.
Yeah.
That's like the go-to.
Have you ever done the fried Snickers?
No, I didn't.
You haven't done a fried Snickers bar?
Not the fried Snickers.
You got to go for it.
Yeah. In San Diego at that fair, they had Krispy Kreme donuts. You know Krispy Kreme donuts?
Uh-huh.
It was a chicken sandwich with Krispy Kreme donuts.
Okay.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
So there's always a fun fair food that you could try.
There's also, I've also heard of fried Coke. like Coca-Cola. Really? Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Fried, of course, fried ice cream.
Fried everything. Fried Oreos. Yeah,
fried Oreos. Fried Oreos. Fried Oreos really good. Are good.
Yes. Yes.
I'm trying to think of some of the other wild and crazy things that I've had at the fair.
I feel like there's always just one thing you have to try.
I mean, you got to get a funnel cake for sure.
Yes, funnel cakes are a must.
Got to do that. Now, do you do anything, like, do you play the games and stuff, or do you go like, riding rides and Ferris wheel?
This
or?
Is really, we're not the rides. I mean, I love the rides, but my family not so much right now. Because I have a 3-year-old and 1-year-old, so.
Yeah,
so we're not at the ride stage yet. My son is an adrenaline freak, so that day will come, which I'm looking forward to. Yeah. But pretty much we just go people watch and walk around all the exhibits and all that stuff.
That's
so
fun.
Yeah, so no rides. I mean, we may go on one, but yeah, nothing planned right now.
Do y'all do a fair trip like every year? Is this a tradition?
No tradition. Just an open afternoon. We don't have baseball this weekend, so
we're
like, heck, let's go.
That's
go.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's where it is. So we'll come home fat, sunburned, and all that good stuff.
Yes. My younger boys are playing tomorrow afternoon late.
You got the late games.
That kind of worked out. I would have rather had morning games, but it's all right. It worked out. And we've got a little flag football in the morning.
Awesome.
So it'll be fun.
Nice. I feel like tournaments, as soon as those – like, there's so much anticipation when tournaments post their times. Whenever they post their times, it's always like, me personally, I love the 8 a.m. games. I love 8 a.m., 9 a.m. Yeah. I love first thing in the morning. Give me back to back. Give me back to back games, and then I'm home by lunchtime.
Yep.
You know, like, give me those two games.
Yeah.
What time do you guys play tomorrow?
So we're 4:30 and 5:45.
So. Okay. So at least they're back to back.
Right.
It's not like a 12 o'clock and a 4 o'clock
and
or something.
You just never know at that point in the day, are they going to be ahead of schedule? Are they going to be behind schedule? The one we're playing, they're pretty good at staying on schedule. So,
gotcha.
We should be all right. If anything, I would think that we would end up playing a little earlier than later.
Yeah.
The way that that they do their tournaments.
That's always the mystery, though, when you go into a tournament, is with time limits, with drop-dead times, with, you know, the padding, the cushion in between games that they give. How do people run so far behind?
Yeah.
It is mind-blowing. I understand, like, Sunday, like, a bracket because it's, you know, win or go home.
Right.
But, like, on a Saturday or a Friday game when it's just pool play and you have drop-dead time limits,
yeah,
it is mind-blowing how like, backed up it can get.
I don't know about you, but I can't stand a drop-dead time limit.
Yeah.
At least while I'm playing the game. You know, I would much rather at least finish the inning.
Yes.
I don't like the drop dead. I don't know about
you. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. Like, it's just going to help you get seated for Sunday. But, yeah, I get it. Yeah, drop dead times are no fun.
Yeah.
Like, finish the inning, give the team either a chance to score more runs or win the game or whatever. Yeah, drop dead times. But I am happy about drop dead times because then it keeps hopefully it keeps the games on schedule.
You definitely know when the game's gonna
end.
So
you're not 2 hours late.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
On Saturdays, do you like to hit first or do you like to be home team?
Man, I suck at the coin flip. I lose the coin flip every single time. So I mean, it is what it is. Like if I were to choose, I kind of like taking visitors. Kinda, like, if I lose the coin flip, we're going to get visitors, right?
Right.
Everyone picks home team. And I'm actually never mad at that because we're going to be a team that's going to punch them in the face first.
Mm-hmm. If you can keep them out there a long time, then that can really affect things later in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Because vice versa, if we're home team and that visitor, you know, puts up even 2 runs, I feel like sometimes teams are like, oh my gosh.
Oh, dang it.
Even though it's like 2 runs. Like, what the heck?
Right.
But yeah, I
there
don't
is
mind
something
visitors.
About the psyche that if you can jump on them early and score some runs, it really can help boost you. And we we'll take home team if we win the coin toss.
Yes.
And I have an assistant coach go and handle that. And he has a very strong track record.
Maybe I need to bring him in.
I was losing all the coin flips. And I also really like making sure that while the plate meeting is going on, that I can just keep hitting balls and working on in and out or whatever it is, or if we're in the middle of hitting our weighted balls or whatever, I can just stay focused on getting the team prepped, and he go and handle the coin flip. And he's got like a 90% win rate, I think, over
Absolutely. All right, so what's the weirdest coin flip? What's the weirdest usage of a coin flip that you've ever experienced? So what I mean by that is, a couple weeks ago, we had Siri call balls, or they just say, "Hey Siri," hopefully my phone doesn't go off, but flip a coin and they'll say, you know, heads or tails.
Oh, that's funny.
I've seen the clicker, the odds or even number. Yeah. What, have you had any of the other ones?
I've done the clicker. I've done the guy pulling out a coin flip app on his phone.
Oh my gosh.
So at least that's like one more step beyond just, "Hey Siri, tell us."
Yes.
But I don't know. That's funny. I hadn't heard of the "Hey Siri."
Oh yeah. 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we actually had a new one. This was the first time I've had it. And I was like, dude, tournaments need to handle this, you know, do this more often. We got to bring a player out there for the plate visit.
Yeah.
And then the player, it was closest to the mound with a ball. So game ball, toss the ball, and the closest to the mound was won the flip.
Yeah, like a little bocce long bowling or something.
Yes, yeah. So close to the mound, got the choice. Of course, my guy rolled it too hard and ended up halfway to second base. But that was a pretty cool way to kind of tie in the kids and something a little different.
Like
that was the first time I've seen that happen. That's actually pretty cool. Yeah,
I like that. I like that
for sure. All right. So diving in,
jump into, what do you want to do first?
What's our first, what you pick, man?
Let's talk about success.
Success.
It's time to talk about success. Woo!
All right, so today's success, if you've been following along with us, we've been breaking down John Wooden's Pyramid of Success. So we've been going piece by piece, block by block on that. Today, we're going to be discussing loyalty. That's the next block ahead. Looking at it, though, first off, what do you think of when it comes to loyalty? What do you think about that?
You know, the first thing that I think of is loyalty to others. But you brought up the definition earlier before we started recording, and I was kind of surprised by the definition that Wooden puts on there under loyalty.
On his course website, he actually gives like small definitions to each building block. And this one says, so loyalty is to yourself and to all those depending upon you. Keep your self-respect. I thought that was very interesting. It wasn't just like, hey, be loyal or be genuine or, hold tight to those around you or anything like that, but like keep yourself respect and to yourself and to all those depending upon you. I thought this is a very interesting definition.
So I think it on one hand, it means like be true to yourself. Have some integrity. I think that's gotta be part of it too.
Yeah.
At the same time, recognize the people who are part of your story, who are part of helping you to be successful. And, don't forget those people to make sure that you aren't making decisions that could negatively impact them.
Absolutely.
It's interesting. Integrity, I don't see it on the pyramid. I'm trying to take a look at it now, but I don't know if it's one of the mortars. Oh yeah, it is. It's towards the top. It's one of the mortar, like on along the sides
for integrity.
So
yeah,
but I do think there is there's some overlap there between that loyalty to self.
Yeah, there's definitely a correlation among them. Yeah, for sure. I think that's probably why integrity is kind of like the mortar on the outside, but loyalty is just such a big foundation on it. It's the base of the pyramid. I think it really just comes down to making sure that you're loyal, making sure that you keep yourself respect, that you also, because sometimes, we've all been in situations or teams or wherever where sometimes pressure gets to the best of you. And sometimes like it makes you act a different way or it makes you, even in this sense, like for teams, you know, in reference to teams, sometimes can make you quit a team, you know?
Yeah.
Which we were talking about that, where we discuss, you know, travel ball a lot.
Right. Loyalty.
And loyalty.
Is, there's now no such thing.
Yeah.
Travel ball.
For sure.
I would say it feels that way sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? And I know that that cuts both ways too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is definitely... There's a lot of loyalty amongst travel ball, but you see, there's a lot of team hoppers. There's a lot of people that will just jump ship. The grass is always greener, or this coach wasn't giving little Johnny enough playing time, so they jump.
And from a parent side of things, I think, you know, it's frustrating to see a coach always looking for that next great player and constantly. You know, working more like a general manager, trying to acquire players than they are at developing the players that they already have. I know I've experienced that, you know, being on the parent side of things of like, dude, like we were one of your most consistent players and families. Like, we showed up to everything.
Yeah.
And you brought in this guest player and they played ahead of my kid.
Yes. I'm not a big fan of coaches that bring in, pick up players and play them over their teams. But there is a sense of if they're with your team religiously and they're pretty much like a person on your roster, then sure, play them. But like the one-off where it's like, oh, this kid's really good. He's going to be our starting pitcher game one, game two, game five, game six, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's
because I've utilized guest players myself.
Absolutely.
And, if they're really effective. You know, when it comes down to it, especially on Sundays, the more games you win, the more you play, the more playing time and opportunities everybody will get.
Yes.
So, I mean, I get that side of things. And I've also done it, too, where I knew that this particular guest player was interested in being with us long term.
Yeah.
And actually did stay with us for the rest of the season. So, you know, there are times when it makes sense to utilize guest players in that way. But generally speaking, I try to prioritize my current players over, you know, that one-off player.
Absolutely. I think it goes, you know, even beyond that, like from the coaching sense, like when I think about coaching, like you have to be loyal to your team as well. And I'm not talking about guest players. I'm just talking about like, how do you earn loyalty amongst your players? I think a lot of it is like just making sure that you communicate effectively, making sure that you're always on time, making sure you're always, you know, holding up your end of the bargain for your team. That's one way that, you know, coaches could definitely show that they're loyal to their teams and their families and all that.
Yeah, I think it also means making sure that we work on that as a coach, like to develop that loyalty amongst the players.
Yeah.
To try and deepen the relationships between and among the players and the parents, to try and create that team bond again, kind of similar to what we talked about last week with friendship. It also, like, that idea of loyalty to self means staying true to your own beliefs, your own morals, your own sense of purpose, and like why you do this sport. So you have to have that grounding as well, whether that comes from religion, from church or whatever, or if that comes from some other place. It is important as a player and as families that are part of a team concept to make sure that, you know, you're not compromising on those fronts, whether you're a coach or a player.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, great building block with all that. Do you have anything else to add to that?
You know, yeah, I think, again, it goes back to the idea of developing belief in yourself and trust in your teammates. You know, we talk a lot on my teams about, I'm going to trust my teammates and my teammates are going to trust me.
Yeah. And that even goes to coaches too.
Yeah.
It even goes to coaches too.
Right.
Trusting your players, trusting your pitchers.
Yes. Yeah. And there are times when I have to remind myself I need to trust them here.
Yeah.
Because there are, yeah, there are times when I want to knee jerk and either yank a pitcher, or switch the lineup, or whatever it is. And it's like, no, maybe I need to just, you know, trust them.
Yeah.
It's hard to
pitching
do.
Changes is very hard. I mean, we've all been there where you leave a pitcher in too long because you're like, oh, I trust them to get out of this. And
right.
Sometimes they do. And then it worked.
And then in hindsight, you're like, oh, dang. I left them hang out to dry. Yep. And I shouldn't have done that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's tough. Well, we're going to talk more about developing pitchers and handling pitchers and rotations and all that a little later in this episode.
Yes.
But yeah, there we go. Loyalty is an important building block. If you want to develop a team that is built for success, you've got to have, again, some selflessness. You've got to have strong relationships to build that foundation for later success.
Absolutely.
And you know, to really develop that idea of loyalty, you need those glue guys. It's not always going to be your best player who develops team loyalty. Sometimes it's going to be that player who's at the back end of the rotation or who's a substitute or whatever, who's like just really encouraging or a team cheerleader or whatever. And it's important to have those guys too.
And absolutely.
And to not devalue them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm looking forward to continue building through this pyramid of success.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good topics.
Absolutely.
Here.
Next week we'll be discussing the next one, which I'm looking forward to, is cooperation.
All right. Yeah, that can be a tough one in team, especially in baseball where we're so competitive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
All right, let's get to our next segment. Here we are going into
Chalk Talk.
Chalk Talk.
Chalk Talk! All right, so Josh, you got the Chalk Talk topic of the day.
Absolutely.
Hit me. What you got?
Yeah, so as a reminder, Chalk Talk is all about just great wins, successes, even learning experiences. So I know we had a learning experience. This one is actually just a really cool experience that I had at our last tournament. We were playing down in Midwest City at Reed Complex, which beautiful facility. It's half, the infield's all turf, outfield's grass. Well, we were playing on 14 tournament there. And my 3-hole hitter and my 4-hole hitter, first game is a team that we it was kind of a toss-up. It was like, it's going to be a really good game. Well, my 3-hole and my 4-hole just blast these bombs.
Oh,
like,
yes.
just long home runs. It was very cool to see. Definitely was just like a huge, nail in the coffin shut. I think we already had a pretty decent lead on them. And then it was just like, we had two bombs. I think they were like in two different innings. But just really cool experience. We ended up winning that game pretty good. So fast forward to the next game, my 3- and 4-hole hitters. It's a team that's kind of okay. They end up going back-to-back home runs.
Oh, that's
again.
Awesome.
And that was the first time as a coach that I've witnessed my players hitting back-to-back home runs. And it was just really cool.
That's
and the
cool.
first thing, so my 3-hole hitter comes in. He's like, got a second home run on the day, which he's just a home run hitter for us. So he comes in, and then my 4-hole hitter hits it. He's new to the team this year. I've known him for a long time. But he comes in, and he goes, I hit it further than you. And it was just a cool experience, kind of just like experience just that success and seeing the players have so much excitement for that. But it wasn't just like the hitters. It was also the team. They were just so stoked. They were so pumped. It was like, oh my gosh, these two power hitters just went back to back home runs.
Yeah. What did that do for your team confidence and morale?
Oh man. It was just, I think it allowed everyone to start playing really loose.
Yes.
But also, like, the caveat is, like, sometimes it could put them back on their heels, you know, where it's like, oh, you know, we just smash this team or whatever, like two bombs, two home runs. But it definitely boosted kind of the confidence.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Of course, it starts leading towards everyone swinging out of their shoes. You know,
now, right, cause
now everyone wants to hit a home run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did that lead to some more success on Sunday?
Success on Sunday. I wish I could say yes. Unfortunately, we were a little asleep on Sunday, and yeah, one and done. But one and done. But Saturday was fun. Just seeing the smiles and the excitement for those home runs. It was a blast.
That can lead to, you know, those good vibes continuing on for absolutely the rest of the season.
And both
of
those hitters, like, it's just fun. And like, I have a number of guys on my team that are like this, but the mindset when they step in the box where they're like, no pitcher is going to blow by me. No pitcher is going to beat me. Yeah. And you could just tell by the body language. We all have players on our teams where they step in, you're like, he's probably going to strike out. You know, like, I hate saying that, but you're like, the body language isn't there. There's not a lot of confidence. But it is cool seeing for those players, the ones that evolve throughout the season and boost the confidence. But then there's some guys that just like walk in, you're like, oh, he's about to smack a ball, or he's going to fight. So it's pretty cool seeing that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had a pretty good outing this past weekend with my 11U team.
Yeah, how'd it go?
I think we split on Saturday. And then Sunday we won. Oh, I'm sorry. It was a Sunday only double elimination tournament.
Sometimes those tournaments are a blur.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we didn't play Saturday. I don't know what I'm thinking. We lost the first game to the team that ultimately won, the tournament. But it was still like, it was not a good showing for us. We knew we could have played better.
Yeah.
And so we got blanked. We got shut out that first game. And the boys all kind of knew, like, yeah, we could have played a lot better in that game and should have. We played the next two games and won 12-0 and then 12-0.
Wow.
Back to back.
Wow.
So, you know, the teams that we played, I will say, were not – as competitive. They were a little bit younger team that kind of, I think, just got lumped into our bracket. So we took care of business, which was something that we had talked about all week long, because the previous week we had been up 6-2 on a team. That was a good team.
Yeah.
And we let off the gas and didn't finish the job and let them come back. And and so the message of the whole week was finish the job. Let's not have another one of those.
Yeah.
And they did. They kept the pedal to the metal those two
games.
That's
awesome.
So that was good. That made us feel good. The next game we knew we were going to be playing a tough team. Again, just didn't quite have the showing that we wanted. We were hitting the ball, but we were getting under the ball a little
bit.
Got it. So they were hitting it
loopy
far.
Loopy fly balls,
but
yes.
Yeah, they just were hanging up in the air long enough for the outfielders to get up under the ball.
Gotcha.
So we're making great contact. It just was hanging up in the air a little longer than they wanted. So we're working a lot this week on hitting line drives. On trying to, you know, actually hit the ball, like hit and run hits, like trying to hit it opposite side, trying to hit it more on the ground, trying to keep that ball out of the air a little bit.
And just hit it hard so it just continues to roll.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like if it's a line drive, it should end up at the wall.
And I think that kind of work will translate to long balls later as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think learning barrel control is a good way to get better at hitting anyway.
Yeah. So absolutely.
So we'll see. It was a good weekend. Even if we feel like there were a couple games that got away from us that we feel like we could have done a little bit better in.
Hey, it's a learning curve.
It's
a learning experience.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a learning experience.
Yeah. Coming together, learning a lot. So
yeah. So you're talking all about hitting. So now we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk about actually the topic on today is how to develop pitchers. So the complete opposite.
That's right.
So developing youth pitchers, kind of like how, you know, kind of like in travel ball, how do we develop pitchers so they're set up for success? So they have understanding of their arms. So they have understanding of what's, you know, expected of them, but also for the long run of how can we develop them so they make their high school team or college or pro or whatever it is. There's that funny phrase that always comes out is like pitchers are athletes, you know, like,
yeah.
Which I do believe that's true, no matter how funny of a joke that is. Like, pitchers are actually athletes. I think the biggest thing with developing them is making sure that we, you know, take that approach to them. They're not just this cookie cutter, get on the mound, throw a strike. I was listening to another podcast, or maybe it was Tom House was talking about it, about the athleticism that pitching actually takes. Because you have to, because you have to do the same movement over and over and over and over and over, and actually have the body control to do it, and replicate and make them look the exact same, actually takes a ton of athleticism.
That's exactly what I was telling one of my pitchers last night. We were
crazy.
We were in here, you know, for practice, working our bullpens, and I have this one pitcher who is one of our better pitchers. We have utilized him in high pressure situations, and he gets out of it more often than not. He's really been effective for us. But as he's had some success, he's started to get a little more cute with it, and is trying to throw 10 pitches. And
yes.
I'm like, whoa.
Yes.
And has gotten to the point where, like, either he's shaking off pitches that we call, or he's just deciding to throw something else when we call something. And I'm like,
or it's like purposely missing spots. Right.
We've got to pull all of this back.
And
kind of pair it all back to a four seam fastball and a changeup. And to his credit, like, he can throw some other things. I've seen him throw a little split finger. I've seen him throw a little, not big curveball, but a decent just little
kind of
slider-esque curveball. And he loves to throw all that other stuff. The problem is he's not locating his fastball now.
Yes.
Or he's deciding, I'm going to throw a two seam instead of a four seam.
Yeah.
And it's ending up running away from him. Or it's ending up in the dirt, or, you know, he's lost a little bit of that control. And, what I was telling him last night was, what we really need from you is repeatable delivery. We've got to have, that repeatable delivery. That's the key word for you, because you're changing your motion and your windup so much between pitches that it's hard for me to know and pinpoint what the problem is. So, like, if I call for a fastball, but you change your mechanics and it comes out looking more like a changeup, I can't tell if you've thrown a changeup or if it's because of your mechanics that you slowed the ball down.
Yes, it's the truth. And it's funny that you say that. Like, it does play a big part in mechanics. But it's also like the thing that kind of gets me sometimes is when pitchers come off the mound and they're like, hey, coach, because I'm still the second half of fall ball, I'm going to start letting my catchers call signs. But right now I call pitches, but they'll come off and they're like, how come I'm only throwing fastballs? How come I'm not throwing any curveballs? Well, your fastball is not hitting strikes. You know, like, you can't throw any off speed. You can't build your off speed because you're fastball, you're just not locating anything. So we're always behind in the count, and you can't throw 2-0 curveballs. You know, like, I mean, you can, well, but like,
so I would push back on that a little bit. I have a couple of pitchers in particular who, when they're not hitting with their fastball,
sure,
I can call a changeup, and
for
it
sure
kind of just like resets.
For sure,
it does a little reset.
Yeah, it does reset. It does get a feel for it. Like, if you're just like miss fastball, and you know, you mix your grip up. I completely agree with that. But then when they're going like 40, 50 pitch outings and like their fastballs, you know, like that's where it is. But yes, I agree that the reset, like, if you just can't get a feel for your fastball, I get it. Yeah.
Right.
But when it's just like miss, and then you're always starting like 2-0 and you're
like,
what in the world?
Yeah. The thing for us too, I like one of the things I'm working on with one of my boys is location. Like, not only do we want to just throw fastballs over the plate, we also want to start working on how can we work inside and then outside and then back to inside and then back to, like,
sure,
how can we start mixing locations? And because he was throwing his fastball, and I mean he's playing football also this season, so I don't know if some of it is just related to, you know, playing other sports and not being, you know, hyper focused on baseball right now. But like his fastball is just ending up middle every single time, and it's getting drilled.
Yeah.
He's, you know, usually one of our better pitchers. And so what I've told him is, hey, let's work that inside part of the plate and then back to the outside and kind of go back and forth, because people are the other hitters are just sitting on your fastball, and because of that your other stuff's not working either. Getting that fastball command is first and foremost.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think everything needs to be built off that fastball. You're never going to be, I mean, there's guys that have a very good curveball and like they live and die by the curveball, but like you have to be able to throw your fastball for a strike.
Yeah.
That's it. Once you can handle that, then you start developing your changeup. Then you start developing velocity. Then you start diving into all that stuff. But I think command with your fastball, especially fastball changeup, then everything else just, you know. So frosting on the cake.
My younger team is now in 9U, so we have made the transition from coach pitch to kid pitch, or I should say we are making the transition. like teaching pitching is what's the word?
There's a lot that goes into it.
Moving parts.
Yeah. I think thinking as simple as possible to where it's like, okay, can you get to your balance point?
Yep.
Okay. Can you get to your balance point efficiently? Can you hold it there for a second, like have control in your body? And then can you actually separate your hands based on your downward movement? Yep. You know, with your leg. Like, can you do that?
Yeah.
And then can you stick your landing?
I can't tell you how many times I've said balance, down, and out. Balance, down, and out.
Up, down, out. Gosh, yes. I think there's just so much out there that people will get on social media too, like even some parents that don't know pitching or whatever, and they'll go see like, oh, here's how little Johnny needs to throw harder. You know, they'll like implement something, which great and all, but little Johnny can't even hold a balance point, you know?
I feel like one of the hardest things to teach at this point too that I've noticed is they want to throw strikes, and I preach throwing strikes a lot, but they start changing their mechanics and start trying to throw darts
and aim it.
And I'm like, you can't just you have to throw it and get down the mound and stride and all of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. One thing, like, if you're not familiar with like Tom House, I love everything that Tom House puts out. He's just a world renowned pitching coach. He actually pushed out his own, he has his own brand now. I think it's called Mustard. That's his program that he works in. But he has a lot of good stuff. Look him up. So if you, what was that old movie where it was, what was it? Where the two Indian cricket players came over from India and they were playing MLB, Million Dollar Arm, I think it was called.
Yeah.
So Tom House was the pitching coach that he took the players to.
Interesting.
So but he's been around for a long time. He's worked with quarterbacks, any kind of thrower, but he has some really fun, like really cool mechanical things that he talks about, just like, especially about control. And he works with high level guys. It's all about body control.
Yeah.
And like, if we can instill with our younger guys or younger players or coaches that coach younger players, just develop body awareness, you know, body control. That's really it. If they're falling off the mound when they're delivering the pitch, they're not going to be effective, you know, control the body.
So let's talk about bullpens. How do you do bullpens with your teams? How often are you doing them? Are you trying to get everybody through a bullpen session each week, that kind of thing?
It depends on if we play the previous weekend. Our indoor practices, we do bullpens at our indoor practice. Our indoor practice times fall on a Monday, so it depends on if we play the previous weekend or not. Also pitch count. So if I have guys that threw 40, 50 pitches or whatever, they're not going to do a bullpen on Monday.
Right.
But it will be there for those that didn't. I actually swiped a routine from Baseball Dudes, which they're actually pretty good organization. They put out a lot of just like free documents, free PDFs. Basically, like, when I found it, I was like, why am I going to reinvent the wheel when they actually have it? So they have a whole routine. Fastballs only, fastballs changeups, fastball changeup curves, and it's all you know, bullpen routines based in like 30 to 35, 40 pitches. So depending on what you're going for, all from the stretch and the windup, it gives you exact, you know, locations, what to hit and all that. So
are you throwing to the nine square? Are you throwing to catchers? Are you?
It depends on how many people are at practice.
Okay. Yeah.
with football, Mondays are bigger days, fall ball. My junior hires, we actually have school tackle football. So a lot of them play on Mondays. But it depends. So we'll do nine pockets for, like, now that we're in the heart of fall ball. I've been doing a lot more live ABs as the bullpens. Yep. So a lot more live ABs.
That was my next question.
Yeah. So we'll throw to nine pockets. Right now I'm only carrying two catchers. So, and they, one of them plays football. So I try to save them. So we'll throw nine pockets. We'll do live ABs. Preseason, we'll follow the bullpen routines a lot.
I love live at bats, with bullpen sessions. Knowing that, hey, we're still going to work through this routine. We're still going to start with, you know, 10 fastballs and then start working change ups or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or we're going to work on locations, you know, we're still going to work on things, but I still want those hitters seeing live pitching and competing. And you know, if you get a base hit, the pitcher owes you a push up. If you get struck out, you owe the pitcher.
I'm actually looking at a board that I drew out for my team. So we did live ABs and we actually did like a scoreboard with our team. So hitters got points for certain things. Pitchers got points for certain things. And then there's a winner and loser at the end of the day. So it's all about point values. It's like a hard hit ball is plus two, walk hit by pitch plus one, strikeouts minus, weak pop up minus, pitchers got, you know, 2 points for strikeouts, but it's fun, you know, it's a good way. Yeah. I love implementing that with the live at bats where it's just like, hey, here's a score. Winner, I had a fun where the winner gets 20 seconds of a standing ovation. So the whole team has to applaud them. And then the losers have to sing a group song, which is actually pretty funny and embarrassing at the same time for 13 and 14 year olds.
That's awesome. I love that.
But yeah, I think going back to like the question, like with routines is, once we're in season, we do have a routine, but most of the time now, with how much I actually spend with them, only 2 days a week, we just do live at bats a lot.
Yeah. Velocity is the big thing right now, right? Like we've got all the driveline stuff out there that trains pitchers on how to build velocity, and I think a lot of it does work. I am not 100% sure, though, what the relation is or if there is a correlation between velocity and the increase in Tommy John surgeries and all that. I don't know if it's more related to overuse or not. I tend to think that it's more related to overuse than it is to increase in velocity. The physics of it does also make sense, though, that, you know, the harder you're throwing, the more stress you're putting on those joints.
For sure.
But
for sure.
I mean, what are you trying to do with your boys in terms of building velocity and like tracking that and measuring that?
So at our gym, we track velocity. We do follow kind of a looser program of driveline. We don't do any of like the trampoline rebounds or the wrist weights or anything like that. But like we do follow a lot of their plyos and a lot of their pull down work. And we've had great success with it and really no injuries with it. The big thing with like velo, and I think where it ties in, I saw, you know, a few studies from here and there. I think Velo University puts out a lot of newer content, which is actually really cool. But they were talking about like, it's all about spin rates, velocity and spin rates are usually like an overuse will be the big key to like the UCL tears, Tommy John tears.
Interesting.
But Velo, like just Velo as a whole, it's about like trying to develop it as if their body can handle it, if that makes sense. So if they're actually like overloading too much, then yeah, it could be detrimental to them. But if you're a fully mature, you know, puberty age or post, you know, you've already gone through puberty, your body's already developed, then you could just start really tack on velo with that.
I really think underweighted balls are as important as the overweighted
balls. Absolutely,
yeah.
Speed up the hand rate. Yeah, your hand speed. Yeah, really pulling down. I think, like, when we do pull downs, it's an 8-week program that we follow through driveline. And like their pull downs, it just ramps up. It starts up with 5 ounce, which is a baseball weight. Then it's a 4 ounce, and a 5 ounce, and a 6 ounce. But like as you progress through it, 1 of the ounces is 3 ounces, and that ball is actually really hard to throw.
Yeah,
it's almost like you're throwing a piece of paper.
Yeah,
you know, like you can't throw a piece of paper hard, so you're trying to throw a 3 ounce, and sometimes it's actually you don't throw it as hard because it's actually really hard to throw.
Yeah,
it's crazy. The 4 ounce usually people peek out and they start seeing this huge number, but the 3 ounce,
interesting,
it's crazy. Yeah, 3 ounce is really hard to throw.
We play a lot of wall ball in between like at bats or whatever. If we've got batting practice going on, one of the things that I love about the setup here at RSP is the wall ball walls. And they throw those tennis balls. And
they're actually plyo walls, but everyone uses it for wall ball. Yeah.
Well, yeah, my boys use it for wall ball. And I think throwing those tennis balls is a good thing. Like it makes their arms speed up and, you know, throw that lighter implement faster. And I think that then that translates to throwing the heavier ball as fast as you're trying to throw the tennis ball.
Yeah.
The other thing that we've done a lot is long toss. I think long toss is a really good way to develop arm strength.
Yeah, and that's just the staple. Long toss is really the key.
And we've adopted this season the Trevor Bauer long toss. So a classic, I think it's a YouTube video from like 2011 or something like that.
Yes.
But, you know, wet noodle arms on the way out. So big, high arcing throws on the way out. Just keep it loose, keep it free.
Yeah.
You know, throw that ball, use your arm like it's a wet noodle.
Yes.
That's what I tell the boys. And then on the way back in, as you're working back in, it's pull down throws where you're one hopping it to our
your one hopper throw through their chest. Yeah, absolutely.
Trying line drive throws, trying to keep it no higher than, you know, a little bit above your head.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, kind of trying to keep it at that same level and just throwing it really hard and getting that big, you know, shoulder angle and
really pulling down the front side.
Pulling down that front side.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Jaeger, the one that is it Alan Jaeger, I think is his name.
Yeah.
He talks about his long toss program.
J-Bands.
Yeah. But like his long toss, he like gives a perspective like when you're working back to long distance, like trying to literally land the ball on top of their head.
Yeah.
So like literally a big arch, like land the ball on top of their head.
Right.
It's just it gives you that visual of like really air it out.
Yeah.
Really.
For the longest time I had preached line drive throws on the way out and on the way in and kind of have reset from that and kind of going more that Jaeger
absolutely
that Jaeger approach of
trying to
make it a big high arcing throw and not bounce it.
And Trevor Bauer, even though like his name's kind of like rubbed in, but like he like his long toss, oh my gosh. Like if you ever want to see something that's just astounding, just
go find that long toss.
Just go watch Trevor Bauer throw a long toss.
It's still there. It's still out there.
Yes, that guy's wild.
So why does location to you what is the balance between location and velocity?
I think
when you're pitching.
Yeah, I think velo is good, but it's only as effective as if you could throw strikes with it or if you could hit your spot with it.
Yeah.
When you're talking about like location, everything else is built off of that, right? So if you call an outside fastball on someone that's late to it or whatever, like it just sets up the next pitch.
Yeah.
So location, I think location is way more, is just higher sought after than throwing velocity. Sure, there's a rhyme and reason. Like, there's a time and place for, like, just to literally just throw as hard as you possibly can. But if you can't hit your spot, like, then you're Ricky Vaughn throwing it halfway up the backstop, you know?
Right.
But location is just huge. And I love teaching, like, young pitchers is, like, if you miss a pitch, always act as if you meant to do that because it does set up. Like, it shouldn't necessarily give you a, like, a, oh, shoot, I just missed that spot. No, you should think of it like poker where it's like, oh, I meant to do that. Let me base it off the next pitch.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It sets up the next pitch.
If I missed down and away, well, now let me work up and in.
Yeah. Or oh, I missed up. Well, you know what? Okay, cool. I'm ahead in the count. I missed up. Now it just sets me up to just like dropping a curveball, you know, or something.
Right.
So letting your misses actually be a little bit like, oh, yeah, I meant to do that.
Do you tell your pitchers like, hey, when we're on the mound, we're not trying to throw 100%. We're trying to throw like 95. Do you ever
I have not. That. I have not talked about that. Do you talk to your pitchers a lot?
A little bit. I try not to overemphasize it, but yeah. Like
there are times. Sorry to cut you off, but there are times where like you could tell they're overthrowing.
Right.
You know, like that. Yeah. I think that's probably what you're asking is like when they start overthrowing, you're like, okay.
But I also don't want them dropping down to like 70%.
Yes.
And now they're just throwing a batting practice.
Yes.
Pitch.
Or an EFIS. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because they're trying to aim it or be too fine with it or whatever. They still got to throw it and throw it hard. But, yeah, we don't want max effort unless we're trying to blow up by them at the top of the zone or something like that.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, all that stuff, like the percentage is all based on, like, their tempo and, like, what their rhythm's like. Because if you slow down, like, your percentage of what you're throwing – you're going to be all out of whack. Your timing's going to be all out of whack. You're probably just going to start missing, like, even worse. So I think it all ties into also is like what their tempo is, what's their rhythm, what's their pace. You know, like we talked about repeatable mechanics. And a lot of it has to do with like how fast do you go through your windup.
Yeah.
Are you 2 seconds to play? Are you 5 seconds to play? Well, cool.
Yep.
Do it again.
Yeah.
Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. You know.
I've got a boy on my older team that we're trying to get more experience on the mound, and that's his issue is rushing things.
Sure.
So like in practice he was throwing, you know, 15 16 out of 20 pitches were strikes.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, way to go, because he used to be really wild, but now he's throwing like really high percentage of strikes.
Wow.
And so it was like, all right, let's get him on the mound. So we get him on the mound, and he like wasn't coming set long enough, getting called for box.
Yeah.
And then the wildness started to creep back in.
Geez.
And he is also, he is a max effort guy all the time, no matter what.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things I love about him. But yeah, trying to teach him to pull it back just a hair.
Smidge, yes.
So that you can throw that for a strike.
And control your and body. Control it. Yes.
And because he does, he starts to his tempo starts to speed up when he's on the mound, and that's one of the things we're working on with him is just learning to stay under control.
Absolutely. I think that's the key with developing, you know, youth pitchers is just understanding the rhythm, or at least the rhythm that makes them productive.
Yeah.
Let them find their tempo, all that stuff. So like tempo is just your pace, you know, like
right.
Find their pace that they can throw strikes at and just try to keep that.
And when they're younger, like with my 9U boys, this is our first season playing kid pitch. And so we're learning how to pitch. I tend to be a lot more instructional during the game than I would like to be. So like making sure that they're getting down over that front foot and finishing the pitches. That's the main thing that I'm seeing. Cause a lot of them are, they finish across their bodies instead of like really finishing
down. Yes.
Or they're not quite getting that balanced knee up high enough or, you know, things like that. Whereas I will say way less of that with my older boys because they have heard all of that. And what they need to be working on is just the mentality and the focus and trying to figure out what they're going to do with the next pitch. And it's
absolutely
often not a mechanical issue. It's a head issue.
Yes.
A mental thing or whatever it is they're working through.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's switch gears. Let's go into like managing rotations.
Yeah.
So managing rotations, if you're familiar with travel ball, there's tons of different styles of tournaments. There's one-day tournaments. There's multiple tournaments. There's Saturday, Sundays, or there's Friday, Saturday, Sundays. Like, as a coach, managing rotation sometimes is challenging.
Yeah, it
sometimes
is.
Sometimes it's really challenging, understanding of when to throw your one or two aces and then when to throw your not aces, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I think one-day tournaments are probably the most stressful. I've only played in a couple of them. I think that's probably the hardest one to manage.
Yeah, because those one days, it's a lot of games in a short amount of time. And I am kind of the opinion of like once you've thrown somebody that day, they're probably done.
Yeah.
I've tried a couple of times to like throw somebody 15, 20 pitches early in the day so that I could have them throw, you know, 20, 30 pitches later in the day, and it never works.
It's hard.
Something happens to where even though they're not at their pitch limit for the day, once you've been up on the mound and come down off the mound, to me, it's like, okay, we've used them for the day.
Yeah. I have thrown, and I do throw pitchers multiple times in a day sometimes. But yeah, it's only like if they throw like less than 15 pitches. Yeah. Just cause like 15 pitches, it's shown like it doesn't put a lot of stress on the arm. So you can easily still go to another thing, but there are, you also have to know your pitchers. Cause I have one pitcher that he'll go 40 or 50, you know, or no, let's say less than that. Like according to like, so let's say 30 pitches on one day, he won't, like technically he'd be fine for the next day, but he can't, you know, right. like he just can't, right. his arm just won't let him pitch the next day.
Yeah.
So it's understanding your pitchers too. So like for a multiple day, so let's say like a Saturday, Sunday, is there any rhyme or reason how you handle your pitching rotation? So like in reference, like pool play and brackets yes. and all that.
Yeah. So pool play, I pretty much am at a 20 pitch count limit. So I'm following the MLB pitch smart rules. If I want them to pitch the next day, then they're limited to 20 pitches. And I'm pretty religious about that. That typically means one inning. Sometimes if they're really efficient and a couple of our boys can do it, it can mean an inning and a half or even two innings. More often than not, it's one inning. Cause they'll get to about 15, 16 pitches in one inning. And it's like, well, I'm not going to trot them out for
next time you do it. Yeah. You put them out there and yeah.
So.
But then you're also tempted. Like I've done that where it's like, they go on then suddenly a 15 pitch inning. You're like, well, never mind.
Yeah.
He's done.
And you know, and there'll be times where they'll throw 9 pitches in an inning and it's like, okay, we can get one more inning out of them.
Do you have everyone pitch on Saturday and then everyone pitch
pretty
on
much.
Sunday?
Yeah. Okay. So no. Not everybody pitches on Sunday. But everybody, like my goal is we've got to have 7, 8 arms that I can go to depending on the situation.
Yeah.
So that means we're going to have to score more runs on Saturday.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Because we're going to be throwing guys who are going to give up walks or are going to give up hits. And like, I'm just okay with that.
Sure.
Because once we get to those longer tournaments at the end of the season, the 3 to 4 to 5 day tournaments, you have to have that many arms to make it through.
True.
And like from a developmental standpoint, having more kids pitching improves their overall mechanics even when they're on the field.
Yeah.
So I bullpens and all of that, everybody pitches. And we just track everybody.
I agree with that, yes.
And if you're hitting for my 11U boys, if you're hitting that 55 to 60% range of strikes, you're going to get an opportunity on Saturday. If you're less than that, we're going to keep working
in
bullpens.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, interesting.
For my 9U boys, it's 50% because we're really early on. So if you're throwing over 50% strikes or at least 50% strikes, you're going to get an opportunity in a game. If you're not, then you're not ready yet.
Yeah.
And we'll keep working on it.
Absolutely.
That's kind of the way I approach it. Sundays, we usually throw our best pitcher first. Because you
gotta get that first win.
Gotta get the first game and then let the chips fall where they may after that.
Yeah.
And most teams typically do that. Most teams are throwing their best pitcher first. So we'll throw a combination of one or two of our guys first.
Yeah.
To make sure that we get that first game.
Yeah.
And those first games are usually tight. They're usually close. They're usually low scoring.
Yes.
So it's more small ball.
Absolutely.
Thing.
And sometimes if you get a high seed, you're playing against a low seed. And sometimes you may push your best pitcher back a little bit. But
typically
I agree with
that. We're going 1-1 on Saturdays because of that philosophy.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're throwing 8 arms on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's an interesting thought. I tend to have my Saturday guys. My starters, I will literally pick out like every game. I'll have one person I just burn. I just completely burn them. So they'll go 50 to 70. I mean, depending on where we're at in the season, sometimes 80 pitches, but like, they'll just be burned on Saturday and they're done. Just cause it frees up all the arms that I'm saving for Sunday. I have gone to the point now in fall, because fall's a lot about development. I'm actually starting, me and my coach, we were talking about like actually flipping our thoughts to where we're going to start pitching some of our more dominant pitchers on Saturdays, just because they're not quite getting enough innings on Sundays.
Yeah.
Because Sundays in tournament ball, Sunday is that one kind of question mark where it's
right.
Like,
you don't know how long you're going to last.
Cause you may have this guy waiting for the next game, which I hate, you know, you never want to look ahead to the next game cause you have to focus on here and now, but sometimes it's too late and you put him in and they get 10 pitches or whatever. And it's like, well, he's a starting pitcher. We need to push him to 50, 60, 70 pitches.
Right.
So let him go on Saturday. So there are some times in fall that I'm probably going to start throwing my better arms on Saturdays just because they need to get those long outings. Yeah. You know, it's crazy. All right. So we both kind of talked about like pitch smart. So if you're not familiar with like MLB pitch smart, I suggest, you know, looking it up, it's on MLB's website. Just quick Google search. It's mind blowing how many coaches don't pay attention to that.
Yeah, especially in tournaments. It's kind of disgusting to see. You know, you get to the end of a weekend, and you look back at the pitch counts, and it's 175 pitches.
Yes.
For a 10-year-old.
Yes.
And I've seen it more than once. And so technically they followed the tournament rules of, you know, no more than three innings on Saturday, and then you can go five innings on Sunday. Okay. So that's eight innings, of work. And yeah,
there's no limit on pitches,
right? They threw 50, 60 pitches on Saturday. And that should, by MLB Pitch Smart rules, require 3 days rest or 4 days rest
or something.
And they're throwing the next day.
It's crazy.
It's ridiculous. Tournaments need to start, and it's not hard. Like, game changer.
Everybody has game changer.
Every pitch.
Yes. They'd probably have more automation with it too, because right now it's the umpires that have a little chart. They have a little piece of paper that they mark out how many innings they pitch. The coach signs off on it. It won't be that hard to have an official scorekeeper because, I mean, like the errors and stuff like that, like, sure, it may not be accurate, but the pitches are going to be accurate, more or less, maybe plus or minus one, you know, but like the pitch count's going to be there.
Yeah, I think these tournaments all need to switch to pitch count limits rather than innings limits.
Yes, I completely agree on that, man.
Yeah, I also, you know, I went by the innings rule for our very last tournament at the end of the spring season. So it was our World Series tournament. And I still had our best pitcher available innings wise.
Sure.
And I fudged the pitch smart rules. And I regret doing that because he went out there and you could tell his arm was fatigued.
And
he got hit hard.
It's tough.
It was like, he had three more innings that he could pitch that day. But pitch smart wise, I shouldn't have done it. So we all have those moments. We were trying to get that win. You know, it's hard. And tournaments especially are just really geared towards winning the short-term goal, that short-term benefit of winning the game, winning a ring. And it's a really tough temptation for coaches to avoid.
Yeah, absolutely. So switching over to one-day tournaments, now this is like a whole different story. I hate one-day tournaments, but sometimes that's the only option.
Yeah.
We played in one a couple weeks ago. We had the first game of the day, and then we made all the way to the championship, and we left the field at close to midnight. And we made all the way to the championship, and we literally were throwing our two. Like, so we have 10 players. We have eight that are pretty, like, they're good. We have two that can throw. You know, like, they just throw.
Yeah.
So the championship game, we had our two throwers on the mound.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it's...
That's who you get, just, yeah.
That's literally all it is. I do feel like there's a lot of teams that would have probably put out their ace in the championship game, you know, like not paying attention to pitch counts.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you manage one-day tournaments?
Same way.
It's hard.
It's like, who do we got left at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Because we're not, yeah. We're not going to throw the same person twice in the same day.
There are some guys where it's like, okay, this game's kind of a toss up. It's a pretty even match. So like every once in a while we'll throw like our starter and we'll kind of see how the game goes. If he's getting shelled, we'll pull him at 15 pitches and save him for the next game.
Yeah.
Or if he's dealing, then just burn him. You know, he's done for the day. Let him go, whatever, 60, 70 pitches and be done.
That's kind of what we did this past Sunday. We threw one of our more effective pitchers and we left him out there for a third inning. And that's when they started hitting him. And
then the pitch count runs close. Up. Yeah. And then you're like, okay.
And then the time was out. And it was like, well, if I replace him now, then we run out of time.
Yes.
And I was like, just finish the inning. Just finish the inning. And we couldn't do it. We were close. It was like we were up 1-0. And then they went up 2-1.
Yes.
And then it ended up being 6-1.
Yeah.
It's so hard. It's so hard to figure out to pull a pitcher.
It's the truth. And I think every coach goes through that situation. That's a struggle. It's a struggle to decide. If you leave him in and he does his job, then you're a hero or, you know, great decision making. If you leave him out too late, then you start hearing like, oh, we should have pulled him or whatever. Like, it's just it's a really hard thing. I think pitching changes is probably the most stressful thing that me personally that I go through. Yeah. Where it's like, is it time? Is it not? Is it time?
Well, and
not?
Especially because it's also fall ball. Like, you're also trying to keep the big picture in mind of, hey, we need to get this guy work. We need to get that guy work. This guy's only gotten one inning and he deserves more. And
yes,
it's really easy to get stuck in the rut of just throwing the same guys over and over again. And
yes,
you've got to give more guys more opportunities. And it's not easy.
Absolutely. So how do you handle pitchers when they come off? Are you full bought into pitch smart, pitch counts, all that stuff? Because what happens if a pitcher goes, let's say, whatever, 40, 50 pitches on Saturday, and then on Sunday they're like, Coach, my arm feels really good. It feels really good.
Yeah. I don't listen.
Are you
going to
throw them?
No.
I don't either. I don't either.
But they have told me that, and I'm like, no, dude, you went 40 yesterday.
I'm just wondering your take on that, because I have pitchers like that where it's like, oh, yeah, I feel really good. It's like,
now, I will say there are times when, like, if they went really quick in the first inning and they threw 9, right, or 10, if they're up to 20 in inning 2 and we just need one more out, I'll let them go up to about 25. Maybe.
Sure, sure.
It's once we start hitting like 30.
That's the question. Well, I think that's where you have to understand.
Now we're kind of pushing that limit of what 20 really means the day before. So I'm kind of in that like 22, 25 range if we can get that final out and do it quickly.
And like the older kids, you could definitely kind of push the envelope a little bit more for that same day, you know, coming back later on. But like, yeah, it's really dependent on your like that specific player for sure.
Yep. All right. Just a lot of good pitching talk today.
Absolutely.
A lot of good info.
Yeah.
I could keep talking pitching. We didn't even get into like calling pitches or count strategies or anything like that, really.
Yeah. I think there's so much to be said about just developing youth players and then also helping coaches understand that there's so much that goes into pitching. Like, we didn't even get into mechanics. You know, like, we didn't even talk about pitch location, pitch, you know, like calling. We didn't even talk about mechanics. I would say just find someone that understands pitching that you can agree upon and just kind of just learn from them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good call. I will say just real quickly on creating practice plans for pitching. The one thing I do, especially in whether it's live ABs or whatever, I almost always have the batter start with some kind of count. So
sure.
We're not starting from 0-0. So if I really want the pitchers working on throwing strikes and not walking batters, I will start the hitter at a 2-1 count.
Sure.
If I really want my batters working more on attacking pitches and not being too picky, I'll start them with an 0-2 count.
Dang, that's harsh.
Yeah. You start with an 0-2 count
and
you've got to make contact. You've either got to foul it off or, you know,
I mean, it gets the point across because there's so many youth I mean, I feel like not just youth players, but like they'll step in the box, they want to see a pitch. It's like, no, get in the pitch, and if you see a pitch that you like, hit it. Like, yeah, it's the first pitch.
Yeah.
So I like that. Like, stepping in the box thing is 0-2 already. Like, that's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough.
You know, some of the boys that I've had for a while are used to it.
Yeah.
And they get in there and are ready to swing the bats. Some of the ones that are new, it's a little bit of a struggle, but they're getting,
for sure,
they're getting the hang,
yeah,
of it.
But like the learning to that too is like when you're on deck, like study the pitcher.
Right.
Yeah, you know, you're on deck, like you should know what he's throwing that day.
Yeah.
You know, if it's 0-2 count, they're probably gonna throw more breaker balls or change ups or whatever, mm-hmm, so you're probably gonna, mm-hmm, see a lot more off speed. So study it. See what he's throwing.
See what their tendencies are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, awesome.
All right. Well, thanks, Josh. This was good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to, you know, continuing on this series about just developing, you know, catchers, developing pitchers.
You want to talk middle infield next week?
Yeah, absolutely. Talk everything based around middle infield.
Let's talk about that. Sounds good.
All right, guys.
All right. We'll see you next week.
All right. See you next week.